Welcome to Film Corner.
Welcome.
If you're watching this on video, I decided to point out that Mike and Ben are currently essentially professionally lit.
We've adjusted our lighting. I did it because there's that light you can see there that was very, very, very garish and annoying and distracting and possibly even sort of seizure triggering. So I've killed that.
Yeah.
Out's come the bolts. It's quite gloomy, but it is better.
It looks, Mike, like you're pulling close to like a miner's lamp, or you know, like imagine if you're walking along a windswept pier with a kind of sailor's lamp.
Yeah.
And you're holding it close. Come close, child.
That is, and let me tell you my tale.
Yeah, that's what you're giving off.
Oh, that's funny, because I was thinking a Netflix series about a 70s serial killer.
Very much the same lighting. After that, it's all in the score.
It's how you convey
the tone.
Yeah.
But it is, if you go to film school, it's the same lighting setting.
It's the same. Yeah, that's
how Sea Shanty Heavy is the soundtrack is basically the difference. On
it's also my jumper is assisting with the sea
shanty vibe. It's quite
and that
nautical,
can go both ways.
Yeah.
That jumper can go maritime, but it can also, you stick a tweed jacket around that and it's 70s professor. Who's mastering in murder.
This is a nice jumper, Mike.
Yeah, thank you. Nice.
Is it new?
It's new. It's quite, it's quite new.
Okay.
It's quite new. That's a really weird answer, Mike.
Thank you.
I mean, how new is it?
I'd say it's quite new.
It's quite new.
If I was to, you know, put an adjective on it.
In the grand scale of the universe, it's quite new.
Yeah.
In the universe of Mike Wozniak.
I think it's in less than double figures wares.
Oh, okay.
Wow. That is new.
Yeah.
See, it would have been a birthday present, which is November, but also it is a nice jumper. So I haven't worn it very often because I don't want to sort of spill curry down it, for example.
Can I say that's the paradox of good clothes, which I often feel, which is that often I won't wear clothes because I like them.
Well, exactly.
And so I'll be like, well, I don't wear clothes I like, so I need clothes I don't like.
Yeah.
That's what I wear.
Like, I'm walking Pam most of the time out with Pam. Why would I wear, I'm not going to wear my brand, my lovely, lovely fisherman's
jumper. But what's weird about it is that you actually need clothes that you don't like. And I made the mistake of giving away a shirt that I really hate to a clothed receptionist.
You just assume, seeing she was wearing clothes.
Yeah,
she'd accept some clothes.
No, into a sort of clothes bin, you know, for recycling dishing out clothes to people. And I massively regret it because I hated that shirt and therefore wore it all the time. And I'm absolutely screwed because I've got a cupboard full of shirts I like that I refuse to wear.
Yeah.
Henry, you explained to me a theory, which I think is true, which is when you buy a new thing that's maybe a little out of the ordinary or a bit fancy for you, and you think this is a bit fancy, you actually won't start wearing it probably for about 12 months. And then it kind of comes in.
It's a 12-month cupboard marinade.
Yeah.
That it had to sit in for 12 months.
Yeah, I have a very similar... Yeah. Similar approach. All right. I mean, basically, there were two. There was also a sort of overshirt thing that's quite nice. That's been deployed for like
Parents' evening.
Exactly. Parents' evening. Your nice gig.
Okay.
And so on and so forth.
Yeah.
You know,
smart cash.
Meeting Mr. and Mrs. Big Time.
Yeah.
Okay. Down on Hollywood Boulevard. That kind of stuff.
Yeah.
You know.
It says I'm a cool guy, but my head is screwed on straight.
Yeah, yeah. And so it's in heavy, 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 heavy smart mic circulation at the moment.
So that's getting absolutely battered.
It will get battered. Yeah, yeah,
yeah. So I went through a ritual to do with this recently. So I bought some trousers in the sale.
You're about to say where they're from, and then you pulled out.
I pulled out.
Dixon's.
So my local Dixon's.
Because they auction off the uniforms of dead employees, don't they, once a year. And you're always first at the door.
It's first at the door. Because a lot of the temporary staff they buy during employ. Well, I mean, if you look at the contract, they do actually buy them. But a lot of the temporary staff they employ during Christmas, they're not used to the speed at which a lot of those DVD books come out. And it'll knock them out.
You get a lot of CD trade decapitations, don't you?
You do. Because also the young aren't used to them, but obviously they're back in fashion now. So there's a... Oh. Anyway, no, I bought some trousers. And what's happened is this, and there's a passing of the baton happens from trouser to trouser. So I've had a pair of trousers sat in my cupboard for years I haven't worn, and suddenly this new pair, which I've just bought, has replaced that one. That comes out of the cupboard, finally, and becomes my trousers I'm wearing all the time now.
Brilliant.
So there's a kind of,
and they're heavily.
So
married.
Your Oasis themed denim jeans can finally get
finally
into circulation.
Yeah. It's got one Gallagher on each each knee patch, and if you knock them together, it looks like they're having a head to head. So it's film corner. So Ben,
we shouldn't talk about our lighting too much because it's maybe a bit alienating to those not watching on video. But my lighting, I think it's like
paint a picture with words. Ben.
Maybe I'm about to be operated on. It's a bit clinical. It's a bit. I'm going to get my kidneys taken out. You know,
well,
by
it's
a vet.
Also you've gone for quite heavy chiaroscuro contrast in that you're wearing fully black headphones, black top, black rimmed glasses, black microphone,
I'm liking that, Mike. To say what I'm really enjoying that. Mike, it's very sort of it's quite sort of two tone. Yeah, there's a sort of two. And what I like about it is, Ben, to me, you look like, again, it's a high class Netflix series about the Profumo affair. And I don't know who you are, but you're some sort of 60s journalist or 60s photographer or something that's hanging around.
Someone who was there. What a life. The things he's
doing. It's very 60s cool. It's very, very 60s cool, Ben.
Oh, I love it.
You're looking great. Now, I, on the other hand, have not used professional lighting. I think I look absolutely appalling, really weird, a bit alien.
There is a touch of the prize winner coming across with you.
I've got real prize winner vibes. But why?
But there's something about also the image where everything in your image, Henry, is basically the same colour. Everything's just a slightly off...
Salmon,
exactly.
Off salmon.
It's really strong salmon.
And even the T-shirt, I mean, there might be a pattern on it, but it's hard to tell if it is a pattern or just a strobe effect. A laptop you've spilled some coffee on.
Yeah, it does look like that. And also, it's bringing out the salmon in my face. Mm. I feel I've got like a central salmon, like the middle
of the salmons of the world, right. Absolutely. You've got your North Atlantic salmon, you've got your...
Iceland.
Alaskan sockeye salmon.
Yeah, your southern oceans.
I've got the full salmon spectrum.
All there.
But it's only in the centre of my face where it goes out to kind of pale and it's more of your cods, it's your haddocks, isn't it, around the outsides?
It's a lightly blanched.
Well, you've got a
gammon.
Yeah, you've got a sort of central roe sack, I would say. Going
yeah. It's very blanched gammon. It's very roe sack. I mean, it's absolutely horrific. I'm going to have to look at... So Ben, have you got one of those things?
But this is why the video has to be... I mean, again, apologies to people who aren't watching. Yeah. I mean, don't watch. Some people will watch. People have asked us. You know, this is being shared amongst trusted friends, right?
Yeah.
Isn't it, really? Do you know what I mean?
It's not eye candy. It's more eye sort of like quite old biltong. Do you know what I mean? It's
So you're having to have a sort of 20-minute discussion with your friends about whether or not it is safe, though?
Yeah, exactly. And is it ethical?
Does it last forever? You know, I did find it in the glove compartment of my mother's car.
And is leather actually just a sort of a form of food?
And is it leather? Is it just leather? A piece of a passenger seat that's fallen off?
So I'm going to try and improve this next time. But Ben, have you got one of those circular lights that you see like influencers and have in restaurants? They've got this like circular
ring light.
Is it a ring light?
No, it's not. it's a bit even fancier than that. I bought it for filmmaking.
Blimey! Oh, I've seen this rig.
Yeah. It's some fancy stuff.
Is it the flattering Atron 9000?
I think it is, yeah.
I've been lit by that rig.
Let me say, it did wonders for Mike.
Yeah, he made me look like a sexy monk.
Yeah, he did look like a sexy monk. And I'm a guy who knows what a sexy monk looks like.
Okay, well, I'm going to try and improve on this next time. But for now, I look like a sort of... Yeah, I look like a salmon that's having a conversation with you through a hazy sort of... through a hazy old-fashioned television.
A Vaseline lens.
Through a Vaseline lens.
Mike, what is lighting you?
Mine is, I've killed that bulb there.
Yeah.
So there's a couple of bulbs over there. And I've also, I've got your friend of mine, the old Anglepoise lamp.
Okay.
Because I just plunged into total darkness without it.
Yeah.
Or near total darkness, which did look better, definitely. But this is, I thought I should be visible.
Anyway.
Yeah.
Here we are. It's Film Corner.
It was Film Corner, and we're here to discuss what a movie.
I think I'm going to need some help because I've forgotten what it's called. So
you always forget. It's Hinged? Called?
Yeah.
Unhinged.
Unhinged, that's it. Yeah.
So it's Unhinged, starring our friend of the pod, Russell Crowe.
I mean, he was the draw, right? He was the bums on seats.
Yes, he was. Because the rest of the cast, I'd say, are unknowns, aren't they? Is that right?
I think they would have really struggled to get anyone with any real sort of choice as an actor to be in this film.
The leading lady, who's probably the biggest character in it, really, is from New Zealand. I think she's like a big deal in New Zealand. This was her.
She's been in some sort of breakout New Zealand films, right?
I'm trying to look up and some Australian stuff as well. She's like, I think she was actually really good.
She was very good.
She's called Karen with a C, Pistorius.
Yes.
Yes, I had to look this up. Not related.
I did look that up as well.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Not related. Apparently, quite a commonplace South African name.
Okay.
I'm trying to look up the name of the directors and stuff. Derek Bort. Derek Bort. Anyway, Unhinged. Henry suggested we watch this.
I didn't. Did I?
I think it was me.
I think it was Ben.
Ben, yeah. But we all leapt at it. Of course we did. It's a Russell Crowe movie. We hadn't seen it.
To give it some backstory.
Okay, yeah.
Hello, Pam. Pam's coming in.
Can Pam open the door? It's a bit unnerving. And close it behind her.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay.
When the trailer for this came out, which probably would have been 2020, 2021, you know, it's lockdown, there's not much to pay attention to. I remember, I think it was Henry sent this to me and to you, Mike.
Yeah.
And it sort of blew my mind.
Yeah, the trailer
we were excited about it.
Yeah, the trailer was very exciting.
It was Russell Crowe on full Crowe was the trailer's pitch, wasn't it?
It was Crowe on steroids, wasn't it? It was Crowe being more pissed off in a film than he's ever been in any film.
Yeah.
But not quite as pissed off as he's been in quite a lot of interviews about films.
That's true. That just wouldn't work on screen. It'd be too alien.
So this film is about road rage, fundamentally.
Okay.
That's what it says it's about, yeah.
Okay.
Oh, Mike, you're saying there's deeper subtext there that I didn't pick up on.
It's a misogynist's parable. It's one of the worst films I've ever seen in my life.
Yeah,
it is.
Yeah, I did wonder about that.
It's really horrible.
I found it a very confusing film to watch. I had a lot of different emotional reactions. A lot of the time I just found it very funny.
Wouldn't have been their intention, right? Because they definitely weren't at any stage going for humour.
Should we start off by talking about the context in which you watched the film?
Yes, okay.
So we watched all... There was no screening of this. We were all at home.
Mm.
So, yeah. Mike, give me a location, a time, and a state of mind that you took into this film.
Okay, so where are we? Thursday now? I think it was Monday when this was suggested. I think it was the afternoon I was procrastinating. I leapt on the opportunity to do the 99p Amazon Prime hire so that I could at least tell myself I was doing some work. I then found that I could only stomach the film by watching it, and I would say 7 aliquots spread over the next 48 hours in different locations in the house.
Can you explain what that means, please?
I had to chunk it up. I couldn't swallow it all down in one go.
Is that because you had things calling on your time, like your children or your dog?
No.
You just literally couldn't handle it.
I couldn't deal with it. And that's the last time that happens was when I was doing some kind of film. For some sort of film screenwriting course thing. This is years ago. I had to watch that Lars von Trier film with a bereaved couple.
Oh, I don't know. I mean, all of his are quite hard work, right?
And I had to watch it. And I
was Antichrist.
Antichrist. I hated it so much. I had to watch it in tiny chunks. And I also had to, while watching it, visualize the crew around it because it was so unpleasant.
Oh, so that it wasn't real?
Yeah.
Oh, God.
Okay, yeah.
So I watched this in every room of the house, basically.
Okay.
Wow. Yeah.
A bit like a young couple making love in every room of their new home.
I watched it on top of the dishwasher. I watched it inside the dishwasher. Yeah, all the usual honeymoon period spots.
You watched it involving the Hoover.
Let's say.
Yeah, let's say.
You felt weird when the dog was watching you watch it.
Yeah. Dog's used to that. Dog's used to, me and Henry. Henry the Hoover, that is.
Yes.
Okay, so Henry, what was your context for watching
this? I watched it on my iPad, sat at my kitchen table last night. I didn't get through all of it in one go, so not as bad as Mike, but I generally, it's only an hour and a half, this film.
Yeah, yeah, sure.
It's not a long film. That is definitely one of the best things about it.
Oh, beyond shadow.
Imagine if it was 2 hours 40. Like, imagine 2 hours 40.
Yeah.
And then at the end, ended with To Be Continued, which is what happens at the end of Wicked. I watched it in two chunks. So I did struggle to get through it in one. I was sat at my kitchen table, and then I finished it this afternoon. Struggled to get through the last 45 minutes without I had a brief nap. So I did actually watch it in three chunks, I'd say. I finished it by the end. I was on the sofa. It was sat on my chest.
Okay. What about you, Ben? Did you do your usual sort of DIY drive-in movie thing where you take a laptop down to the seafront, pop it on the promenade, and park up your I-10?
You like to get lots and lots of popcorn kernels, don't you? Then whack up that heating. Whack up the heating in the car.
Close the windows.
Close the windows.
Get away.
Woohoo! Yeah. Quite exciting.
For me, it was a breakfast movie.
What
a start to the day.
It's a really bad breakfast movie. Let me tell you that.
It's a dreadful start to the day.
But I left it too late, so it was this morning. And the only window of time I had was...
God, you had to sort of cram it, like sort of revising for an exam on the morning. You sort of cram...
Yeah, so I had to get up...
down you.
I had to get up earlier than I normally would to take my car to the MOT centre for 8 a.m.
Mm-hmm.
Take the Hyundai in.
Yeah.
So obviously I'm in quite a sort of... quite emotionally fragile mood,
of course. Can I say, weirdly, yeah, it's the kind of thing that Russell Crowe's character would be doing in this film. It's quite... Because it's a very car-based film.
It would be the straw that breaks his back, because he's very sovereign citizen, isn't he? He would be appalled that the Department of whatever in Louisiana was making him do that when he should be at a judge of his.
But you had an opposite kind of experience, because Russell Crowe is a very unhappy man in this film, and has a lot of road rage. Whereas you, Ben,
spoiler alert, my Hyundai i10 sailed through its MOT. Sailed.
Wow.
That's wonderful. Which, and maybe that was the yang in answer to the yin of the movie.
Yeah.
Maybe the universe was smiling upon you.
But I dropped off the car.
Can I just say, I know I might be behind the curve here. I thought you were using your Hyundai i10 as an outdoor toilet and you were driving around in a convertible Saab. Was any of that true?
Well, if you go to an MOT centre that accepts cash and cash only, all that is irrelevant.
they just run it through as a mobile toilet, don't they? As a fully functioning mobile toilet. Maybe they recommend that you fill up the soap dish. There's a few little things like that. No, go on.
Long story, the i10 broke. My partner's mother gave us her old Saab. Okay. I started driving the Saab round. I still drive the Saab round, but then I've started feeling emotional about my i10, and I paid more money than I should have done to get someone to fix it. So now I've got two cars. I don't need two cars.
Brilliant.
And the i10 has done less than 1,000 miles in the last year, as I found out today.
Well, it's midlife crisis stuff, isn't it? It's your classic sort of man in the drop top, but normally it's a partner they go back to rather than...
I'm thinking
a previous car that they and it's so lovely to hear that you did go back, because I mean that's often the regret of the male in particular divorcee is that should have stuck with it. Crisis mode.
Yeah. I think it's like because obviously Ben, the Hyundai i10, that was when you were swordsmaning it round South Wales, wasn't it? In your prime.
It was just peak swashbuckle.
Peak swashbuckling. But to me, the car is more like an old stud horse. And you had the option of having it shot and turned into chutneys and glue.
Cut its dick off, get it taxidermied and lacquered.
Get it lacquered.
Yeah.
There's various different ways you can monetize it. Turn it into a ride for children. scoop it out from the inside and make it the base for a cameraman during a David Attenborough show. there's lots of different things you can do with it, isn't it? You can put it in the oven, shrink it down, and turn it into a toy, really realistic toy horse. But you've decided to keep it alive. No, I'm not going to shoot. I'm going to keep old Sven, and he's in a field next to your house.
Mm. Yeah.
Occasionally, you look out at him and you remember what it was like swashbuckling around on him.
And I occasionally get on him and go to Asda. So anyway, took the car in for the MOT, got home. It was still early. It was like 8:15, and it was time to watch Russell Crowe's Unhinged. And I have to say, it's not the time to watch Rugrats Unhinged.
But what is the time to watch it? We haven't yet identified the time to watch it. None of the three of us have worked
It's a great point.
Well, look, there's a lot to dig into with this film.
Yeah. Do we need to give the listeners a synopsis? Because hopefully the ideal position of someone listening is someone who has never and will never see it.
Well, the ideal position, Mike, actually, is someone who's considering seeing it, and we can tell them whether they should or not.
Yeah.
And we can stop them from going down that road.
Okay. Fine.
So there will be spoilers without apology in that
case. There's always loads of spoilers. Yeah. It's Film Corner. Now, can we start with a little feature that I like to call Henry's credit rating, where I rate...
Tell us your credit, credit rating.
you try and calculate how much Russell Crowe earned during the making of the film, set against his outgoings at that time.
Yeah. And how much he could borrow against it.
If he sold one of his harmonicas.
No, it's where I rate the credit sequence, which is the thing that happens at the top of the film.
Now, please do that, because I thought the credit sequence was laughable and shit.
Okay. Well, I thought it was actually I thought it was probably the best thing about the film, I'm going to say. I'm not saying it was good.
Okay.
But also, unusually, I'm going to fold in the pre-credit sequence into the credit sequence.
So yes, it starts.
Do you remember the pre-credit sequence?
Is this sort of news footage?
No, that's the credits is the news.
Yeah. The first thing is Russell Crowe hitting a bloke with a hammer in the head.
That's the very first thing, isn't it?
It's an incredible pre-credit sequence, right?
This is a horrible, horrible.
It's really horrible.
Clearly, a murder of estranged / ex-wife
and her partner.
And new partner.
Yeah. But what's quite good about it is, well, not good, but, it sets out the stall of the film, which is Russell Crowe is unhinged. We're not going to start with him hinged. There's not going to be a journey from hinged to unhinged.
Yeah. And rehinging looks unlikely.
Rehinging looks incredibly unlikely. I just think getting the finances together to rehinge a sequel is going to be tough. Based on how this film, but so it's, the film is not called The Unhinging, for example.
No, it's
unhinged. So the character is already unhinged. So there's going to be no psychological journey with this character.
Yep.
So at the beginning, and what we do is we get some lovely little clues that this character might be unhinged at the beginning. So it's raining. That's fine.
Yep.
We zoom in on a car, big car. There's a bloke sitting there. Pickup truck.
Yeah. Yep.
And he does three little things, three subtle little signals that the filmmaker uses to show that this man might be a bit mentally unwell. First is, he takes a wedding ring off his finger.
That's right.
Throws it behind him.
Yeah.
Right? And it makes the wrong sound.
What sound does it make?
It just makes like an out.
Comedy honker.
It makes like the clattering sound of
it hit a goose in the back of the car.
It made the clattering sound that happens in a cartoon when someone has a mishap in a kitchen. It makes a sound that a ring would make if it just landed on the ground or something. They've just googled ring sound. Yeah. It doesn't make the sound of a ring hitting the backseat of a car, which would be muffled.
Barely audible in that heavy rain.
Anyway,
and he's not turned his engine off, I don't think, is he? Maybe he has.
I can't remember. Anyway, if that wasn't a clue enough as to what was going on, he also struggles with a bunch of meds. He's got like loads of meds in his hand. He struggles with the meds, pops a few of the meds.
And he uses the classic Hollywood trope of taking a willy-nilly dosage of those.
That's
meds.
Right. It's completely willy-nilly dosage.
It's the pouring of tablets. Yeah. It's the use of tablets as a liquid.
Yeah. And he's not doing anything like checking whether he needs to have it half an hour before or after eating or any of the stuff that I'd be doing.
And he can eat a grapefruit at the same time.
And he's not had a little thing where there's a week and each day has Monday, Tuesday, and you lift up a little plastic flap and you've got the three in there. He's not done anything.
No, that would be too nanny state for this guy.
So he's totally unhinged. And he then does, if that wasn't enough. He's gone, listen, guys, I'm not sure if it's clear enough that in my relation to hinging, I think some people might still think I'm unhinged.
I know
the film's called Unhinged, and I've done the stuff with the meds and the ring, but I think we really need to ram it home for people. So I say, I light a match and burn it down to my thumb. Which he does for no real reason, just burns a match down to his thumb.
Yeah, I'm going to light it with my thumb.
I'm going to light it with my thumb, then burn it down to the same thumb.
I'm not going to flinch, you understand.
I'm going to flinch, I'm unhinged. He then And then just to sort of seal the deal, he then gets out of the car and does something which I've never seen in a film. There's some brilliant things I've never seen in films happen in this, which is he literally hammers through a front door of a house with a hammer. He just hits the door with the hammer over and over again.
It's the wrong tool. But that doesn't stop him.
We just wouldn't be able to hammer through a front door. And he just hammers through the front door, goes through, and then...
keeps hammering
till he's through. Then what we gather... Because he'd be much better off ringing the doorbell than hammering. Well, whatever, anyway.
But he's unhinged, Henry.
You're right, he's unhinged.
It's not in the doorbell era. But
weirdly, the door stays hinged.
It does stay hinged,
because he breaks through it. I think Russell's gone, listen, we can't have two things that are unhinged at the same time. The audience won't know. They'll think there's a film about a door. So the door's got to stay hinged, but I've got to somehow get through it. But it can't come off this hinge.
Okay, think, how do we get through the door without...
Russell, I just wondered, even when you open a door, it still technically is hinged. You're fired! Get out!
So he hammers his way through the door. And then what we deduce is his... ex or wife or ex, whatever we think, right? With the new partner coming to the hall, he hammers them.
He
both
gets a
death.
Hammer in the face.
He kills
so
them with
quickly.
hammer and fire. Well, I mean, what a combo!
It's hammer and fire. It's very sort of Norse in a way.
So he hammers the couple and then fires the house.
One quick thing I wanted to point out here is the only thing I was positive about this was, for me as a bald man, very rare. Because the he's been cuckolded by a bald man. Now, you probably notice this because his bald head gets stoved in within about 3 seconds of seeing it. But for me, I actually had, every whack of the hammer that guy took to his bald to his bald head was like a little moment of pride for me. Because it's almost always a hirsute man cuckolds a bald man in the history of cinema and storytelling in general back to medieval times. So, that's just a little positive moment for me then. Anyway, so we then went into the credits. So the credit sequence was...
The credit sequence has got the... They've decided to say, we're going to explain all the themes of this film in the credit sequence with the level of subtlety of a man stoving in the head of another man.
It's clearly an afterthought as well, I think, isn't it? It's one of those things where...
Yeah,
they'd have sat around. I think what we've done is just made a really horrible, nasty,
film.
But do you know what, Mike?
Do we need to throw something in to make it suggest that we're making a comment on society?
Yeah.
Okay.
Do you know what, Mike? I've got some background info on this.
Can we just describe what this is? Can I describe what it is first?
Yeah.
In case they didn't. So basically, the credit sequence is a load of news footage intercut together, and it's all like, society's gone mad. Everyone's angry in the street. There's road rage. People are shooting each other. Oh, social media. Oh, everything's
people
confused.
Are too obsessed. Also, some people are using their telephones when they're driving.
People are using their telephones. And there's not enough police on the streets, and that sort of general and that kind of stress. Some stressful graphics suggesting stuff shattering over it. It suggests there's going to be themes in this film to do with this stuff. Yeah.
And it's kind of saying, like, this film isn't just about a psycho Russell Crowe trying to murder people. On, it's actually about stuff, guys.
Yeah.
It's about issues. And I did a bit of reading because I was interested in Russell Crowe, why he did this film. Because it's quite hard to sort of get a handle on what Russell Crowe's career is at the moment.
Yeah,
he's a huge star. Yeah.
He's definitely below above him. This is below him. This is a terrible film for him to be doing. Yeah.
And so I was reading about it, and he was asked to do the movie, and then he declined to do the movie. And then the director said, no, can I have a lunch with Russell?
In which I
will explain to him all of the themes that this film was about and all of the societal problems that I'm tackling with this movie.
Yeah.
Russell Crowe went to that lunch, bought that line, and understood that it was an important film and about important issues. Like people looking at their phone too much.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. As a result, signed up to put on loads of weight for the role for some reason, which I don't understand.
He clearly did. There was a big
Sometimes that's a panic move. It's a classic sort of Hollywood. I'm not just acting, guys. I've either lost or gained a huge amount of weight. Is a classic way of saying.
Yeah, because
I think it's awards time.
Yeah,
he lost 50 pounds apparently to be in Gladiator.
I think he had to be in this. I was like, bloody hell!
It's a real twist, real interview twist. That one.
And I think it's like you say, Mike. It's like if an actor goes like, if this is going to be good because I'm actually going to lose or put on loads of weight for it. Like that's they can't not give me awards if I've done that.
Yeah, and not even for sexy times, right? Because it's not like getting all muscle bound to be a Spartan or something like that. It's to be like So skinny to the point where you look unwell.
Yeah.
Or overweight. Well, yeah, dangerously overweight. Yeah.
Those bodily transformations often, as you say, Mike, suggest that, someone wants to get nominated.
Someone is ready for a nom. Mm.
So maybe he just didn't... I mean, what was he served at that lunch, basically?
I think probably
was
roofies.
Was it like a Cumberland panini? Oh, I've never seen one. They said it couldn't be done. It threads into itself. Infamous. I thought this was just a theoretical panini. They done this. Yeah, I'll be in the film. Yeah, great theme. Yeah, sounds good.
Who made this panini? MC Escher?
Okay, so we know how he did. So, all right, so then we get into the film. Now, the reason I'm looking at my phone is because I've written a few little... I'm not concentrating.
Do we need to give the listeners like a sort of two sentence sort of summary of just what it is basically the film?
Yeah,
are we going for it bit by bit? What do you reckon?
We haven't really worked out our best way of doing this.
Synopsis or bit by bit?
Maybe we should. We should go up to a certain point in the film and then, rather than do the whole synopsis, we could go up to the point where they first meet him in the car, for example.
Yeah, okay.
Okay.
I don't know if that's the best way to do it.
Well, after this sort of bonfire of issues that they put in front of us where they say this is what this film is about, we then meet the female protagonist, and again, it hits over the head like a hammer with her waking up on the sofa next to a book called How to Deal With Your Divorce.
Your child in a divorce.
How to help your child during a divorce, please.
So this is a confusing... This scene I found confusing. I found it confusing and also too clear at the same time. Like, so it's very clear we've got a stressed protagonist with an awful lot going on. She's at the edge financially.
She's sleeping on a sofa in her own...
She's got people that she's taken care of, but then... So she's having a rough old day as it is, right? Mm. Perpetually rough old day. But there's confusing things in it. There's, for example, they do this a lot in Hollywood films anyway, where the person is obviously close to the breadline, but they're also living in a very large house.
Humongous, double-fronted, porched mansion.
If you try that on in British cinema, people would be walking out at that stage because it would just be so unbelievable.
So true.
I feel like they try and deal with this because a bit then, in a really confusing bit, where it turns out she's living with her brother and her brother's girlfriend.
But that was impossibly confusing because we see her son confusing. First of all. Her son comes down and he's obviously having to be a bit self-caring and he's worried about getting a tardy for school. But then we see another, what I assume is a child.
Me too. I assume that's the other child. The
older brother. But there's a very odd relationship that I can't unpack.
Yeah.
But at some point I'm being told that this man is engaged or married and that he's possibly the brother. And it makes no sense because the man looks like a child, particularly because he's got one of those faces where he's got one of those faces and he's exactly the right age where normally Americans, like we've been raised to believe that American 17-year-olds look like 26-year-olds, right?
Yeah, because of Grease.
Because of Grease and Dawson's
Creek. Because of the amount of grease in their diet.
Because of grease in their diet and because of the show Dawson's Creek. Right? So I don't know where I am. It takes me such a long time to navigate my way around this family.
So true. So that opening family sequence... Also, you saying it's a man who looked like a boy, because I thought it was a boy who looked like a man.
Well, this is it.
But that opening sequence, it was like a visual version of when my mum tells me a story about various friends and relatives and I can't follow it.
It'll be, who's
Derek's
Margaret?
Brother is now married to Susan's brother-in-law.
Yeah, and that's made worse by the fact that this child man creature, who we don't know who he is, is on the phone to a very old lady. And is that your mum? Is that why?
Whose mum is who? And also, you're trying to compensate for the fact that generally people, especially maybe women, are cast too young for who they like. Because I was thinking they've cast the lead actress is way too young.
She's too young,
to be who she is. So you're trying to factor that in, and then she's got this son who looks like he's about 3 years younger than her, but then it turns out that it's her brother. But is it her older brother or younger brother? You're saying older.
We don't know.
He's called younger, Fred, and he's just a total douchebag. Spoiler alert, at one point he gets set fire to and I didn't give a shit. I just didn't care. So not invested. He gets these
characters
pushed across
cinema.
The room on a chair into a policeman. And also, while we're on Fred, the penultimate line of the film is
that his name? Fred?
Yes.
I think it was, yeah.
Okay. Then maybe let's not say the penultimate line in the film yet. Let's get to it later. So I was completely confused to who was what age, who was related to who in what way.
And they try to deal with the big house thing, because she says to her brother something like, you've got to sell the house. And then you're like, what house? What?
Yeah, but that might be a different house, doesn't it? That turns out to be an even larger house.
Yeah.
And then in a different suburb. And then he says he's got these, in case we can tell that he's a sort of coattailing wastrel, right? But to underscore that, they do get the helpful line, because again, Russell will be on, I don't think it's clear this guy's just kind of like, you know, a bit of a freeloader. So he's got the line, I'm going to get the business started or something. The vaguest possible placeholder line about, but the business, I'm going to start. What does that mean? I'm going to do the business now in this business.
And you know that that's not a plan that's going to work. And then he's having a Zoom with a granny. And
who turns this? Out to be his mother. Yeah.
Is it actually his mother?
It's actually his mum. That's one of the things I was so confused about, because God, I thought the relationship between his grandson and the son, but then it wasn't that. It was the mother and the son.
Yeah. So the mother.
And then his
mother had all of these children in her like early 60s.
We have to assume.
Because she's now living in a kind of gated like community,
old people's
like village community place, and she's starting to suffer from dementia, isn't it? We're told that she forgets things and stuff.
We're told that she gets lost. We're told that she doesn't like.
Or she gets
it.
Lost.
That's then buried. That's like
We never hear about that again.
We never hear that's never resolved. That's not
So
and the fiance the a young woman appears in who also has so little to do in the film. And all that is flagged up with her, I think she's got like 1.5 lines.
Is this the girlfriend?
This is the girlfriend / fiance of the brother. We're informed that this is another wastrel. This is another freeloader.
Yeah, that's right. They kiss. They have a sort of awkward kiss.
Well, for a long time, I thought they were all siblings.
She's still half, does the classic thing where the stressed person is going to work and she's just sitting down to eat the breakfast that the stressed person has paid for.
I didn't.
It's an absolute.
It was
classic.
A completely bizarre ménage. Can we say that? With no real reference. It was un ménage bizarre. With which you couldn't. I didn't think anyone on earth could really relate to in any way.
No. I think that's when I took my first pause, because I was so exhausted. By that scene.
And while I personally probably couldn't do better than this, I think it's some of the worst screenwriting I've ever seen.
It's terrible.
It just is, isn't it? I mean,
and also there's a lot of I've written down here on my little notes. I've written this like I'm an incredibly high powered and sought after script doctor.
Yeah, great.
That's how I've written this.
Yeah.
Okay. I've written job of the first 20 minutes. Make me care.
Oh, nice.
Because these characters are about to be put through an Australian sausage machine. And you've got to care about them getting put through that sausage machine. I'd never cared for a second about any of them getting sausage.
And I think there's some that we're not supposed to care about, like the girlfriend. Like, I think her only full line is she mentions coupons.
Yes.
And I think in the grammar of the film, we're supposed to think, coupons, you bloody
freeloading coupon.
Yeah, do you know what I mean?
But also, listen, mate.
We're supposed
I
to
love the panini.
Her.
There's one other stipulation I've got. Can we please take on the issue of coupons?
Coupons.
And I'm in.
And I
You've
want
got
someone,
me.
Someone who's in need of coupons to be murdered.
To be murdered.
Okay.
Because we've all been at the queue in a supermarket. Someone's got coupons ahead of you.
Also, in this scene, something is set up which I didn't think would be important, but turns out to sort of be a callback in the final scene.
Chekhov's candy cane scissors.
There are so many Chekhov's things in this. So many things that get set up. So we've got the scissors.
There's also a really shit joke about the scissors. So she goes,
one of the worst,
where are my candy cane scissors?
Incredible.
And then her son/brother says, why do you want to cut up a candy cane?
And then there's a little smirk.
It's hilarious. And then she goes, okay, all right.
There's a child actor next to him who's portraying his brother/son/nephew. Yeah. he can't even find it in himself to manage a wry grin. Nothing.
No.
He's just, yeah.
And what it is it's literally a pair of scissors that are sort of red and white to look like a candy cane.
Yeah.
And we have to see these things because, as Henry says, they are Chekhov's candy cane scissors. Yeah, they, as Mike said.
There's a series. We do get a series of clues. It's clue number one that we think she might be a hairdresser or something like that.
But oh, I'd not even put that together.
No, she's not a hairdresser.
She is. She gets sacked from the salon halfway through by a phone call. Yeah,
again, she was a lawyer. Fucking
hell. No, they are so explicit
with house.
There's so many things that they are so explicit with in this film. But when it comes to anything to do with, like, a woman, they don't bother. So with her and her career, they, like, they'll give you little breadcrumbs for some reason, like this candy cane scissors, and they've got the little thing for your thumb. If you look closely, it's like it's hairdresser scissors.
You keep those in the salon, wouldn't you? You wouldn't take them home with you at night to use as kitchen scissors.
They briefly mention a salon. They mentioned
an
appointment.
The word salon came up, but I just didn't compute it.
But at no point, like, everything else is so explicit. Whereas this, it's like, really, ooh, probably she's a hairdresser. Maybe she's a hairdresser.
But
let the audience work that out for themselves.
Went over my head.
Well, I think the reason you're confused, Henry, is because there's a bit later on, she's in the car, she gets a phone call, and they basically say, you're sacked because you're late. And she goes, oh, I've lost one of my big clients, which is very, like, legal.
That's what it is. I put that together with the fact she lives in
a huge house.
A house the size of the White House.
Because how can you, because they say that at the point where you think, I think she's a hairdresser. And they're like, well, that can't be right. Because what are we just talking about? A woman who has extraordinarily large hair or more hair than it. What, how is she the big client? Do you know what I mean? Because she's not doing it by weight.
Why is one client bigger than another?
Yeah.
Exactly.
That's a very good point.
Unless it's someone who gets her around to cut the hair for 20 daughters.
But also, hang on a sec.
Yeah.
Okay, it's been a long time since I've been in the game of hairdressers and stuff. But a client can't fire you. You're a hairdresser. People come and you cut their hair. They can't fire you. They can stop coming to you. How could they fire you? A client can't fire you. Well, I can't go into hairdressers and fire
you. Fired every salon in London, Henry. Sort of metaphorically.
In a sense. I didn't make them any money. But am I not right? How can she be fired by a client?
No, I think this goes back to Ben's script writing point, doesn't it?
Yeah,
and
yeah.
You sort of hope bits of it were written by a bot. Or just placeholders.
It does have bot vibes.
It's got placeholders and whoever was responsible got the squits before they managed to submit the final draft, and it never happened. I don't know.
So basically, that first section, that first 20 minutes or so, it's establishing that I couldn't give a flying toss about any of these people. I'd happily see them kebabbed, immolated, stripped of their skin.
Luckily, there's a furious Australian kebab stick steaming towards them in a pickup truck.
But there's some really clanging setting up of stuff that's going to... It's just setting up loads of stuff that you know is going to come back. So, like, just things get lingered on in a weird way.
The kid saying, don't go on the highway, mum. Yeah. That was weird. They're trying to set up this thing like he's some kind of savant.
Yeah. But also, the woman who lives opposite has a van. She goes, you got a new van? She goes, yes, I've got a van. Yes. You really do have a van, don't you? Yeah, it's a van. Have you
I
seen
like
my van?
I like your van. it suits you.
Weird line.
Yeah.
So you know
that
van's
coming back for sure. Yeah.
The Fortnite strategy.
The van is. I know the name of the character. I know that the name of the van. There's most of the characters. I don't know their name at this stage. The van is called Rosie.
That's right. You know what? Fred. Yeah, that's the only
Rosie
other
and Fred. That's it.
Fred and Rosie. There's the phone that isn't locked because she doesn't lock her phone.
Madness.
Oh God! I'd not even realized
the whole film can't happen. You could argue the whole film can't happen anyway. But the whole film. Especially couldn't happen without him being able to access her phone. So it's referred to.
Yes, her son picks up her phone and goes, "You've not locked your phone." And she goes, she gives some weird reason why she's taken the lock off it.
The child even says that's dangerous. He doesn't say that's weird or like you should do. He specifically, I think, he uses the word dangerous.
Oh God, it's so.
And he then talks about
this is another thing. This is another part of the kind of the real theme. Of this film is that she is, I think, according to the filmmakers, partly to blame
for what's going to happen to her.
Totally, I think that's the vibe. Like, because you got like the fiance girl, she gets killed.
Yes,
she
does.
And I think the reason the filmmakers are telling us she gets killed isn't because there's a psycho on the loose who's a vicious, violent murderer. It's because she's loitering around the ruddy house with her coupons, being a freeloader. So of course she's there to get killed. And the mum's got her unlocked phone. It's a bit of her voice. They even go to the extent of there's a completely innocent woman in a traffic jam putting
on
some mascara.
I wrote that down, yeah.
And like the only reason that can be in is to say she is at least partly culpable for her murder.
when
she's rammed.
I think it's kind of saying, don't these people piss you off, don't they? This one's about to get what's coming to her.
Yeah, and there's a woman on. Yeah, there's a woman who's on Instagram. Is a similar thing, isn't it? Where it's like she's too busy looking at her phone, and it's like, yeah, she's got it coming.
Yeah.
So I think there is that is true.
That's through the whole film. Thesis.
And so basically, she gets in her car, and she's taking her son to school, and they're going to be late, and they're late all the time, and it's because the traffic is so bad.
And also, it's kind of, she is a bit late. She's a bit of a disorganized late person.
She's overslept.
Referred to a few
she's
times.
She's overslept.
But it's in her character that she's sometimes late for stuff. That's referred to a few times by other characters.
Yeah, the son says you overslept as if she does this quite a lot.
Yeah. And again, as another thing of, you've brought this upon yourself.
Yeah.
Do you see what I mean?
Yeah, totally. Like
the final message is, they even return to it. What's the final message of the film? Don't oversleep. Don't oversleep, or Russell Crowe will come and get you.
Yeah. Yes.
So they're then in a big traffic jam. Mm-hmm. And I can't even remember what happened. She gets to a red light and Russell Crowe's in his pickup truck in front of them. And for some reason, he doesn't go
on the green light.
Yeah.
And it goes back to red. And she's annoyed. And so she barps her horn
at him. He's probably doing, but we know that what he does when he's in his car is he does things that signal someone is unhinged. So there's a few things he could be doing. He could have his hand spread on the steering wheel and have a dagger and be going between his fingers.
He could be doing that.
He could be throwing cards into a hat.
He could be throwing darts at a picture of an enemy's face.
That's true.
Or maybe Hillary Clinton's face.
Yeah.
So he could be trying on some leather driving gloves that he's made out of a victim's skin.
Yeah.
All plausible stuff.
All plausible.
Mm. And so basically she then overtakes the car to go past him. He then drives up behind her or next to her and is very unhappy about the fact that he got barped at.
Yeah.
And he says, have you not heard of a warning beep or something like that?
A courtesy tap.
No, but can I just a little do a tweak to that?
Yeah.
What he actually says is, have you not heard? And hang on a minute.
Is this like a southern accent?
I'm trying, he does a southern, it's a very much like a southern gentleman.
Yeah.
Why?
Tell me why. Exactly. it's a voice which has quite a lot of courtesy attached to it.
He's quite
courteous in a weird way to start with. He's like, excuse me, madam, you don't believe that. I can't fucking do it. You do it, Ben. But yeah, whatever you were doing.
I'm throwing it to Mike.
It's,
why, young lady, have you never heard of a card at a tab?
That's exactly it.
Perfect.
That's brilliant. So it's like, yeah, he's like a sort of southern, I don't know, whatever that is.
A southern belle.
He's a southern belle.
And he's basically saying, like, that was terrible, but I'll let it go if you say sorry.
The courtesy tap, meaning he's going, you know, you should go beep, beep. You should do a little bat on the beeper rather than a meh if you're telling someone to move.
And she's got no time for his shit because she's busy and she needs to get to work.
Yeah. She's got a high-powered job as a hairdresser and she's about to lose one of her clients, potentially. Turns out. So, anyway, it's not a big deal, anyway.
And that kind of kicks off the movie, and then from there on in, she is essentially followed by Road Rage Crow, who's angry.
Who's angry expressly tells her that he doesn't think she knows what a bad day is, and he's going to teach her what a bad day is.
And it turns out a really bad day is what he's had, which is a day when you murder two people in a house.
Yeah.
That's what he's been. He's just what he's just been through.
Then you murder some more people and get killed.
But he sort of follows her around. Because I was thinking, how are they going to pad this out for the rest of the movie?
Me too.
Because it's actually kind of like, I think throughout this film, I really had a sense of, in real life, you could just get out, just go into someone's house, call the police. I don't know, you'd be fine. Just go into a shop.
If your phone's missing and someone else has got a phone.
It didn't feel properly inescapable. You know what I mean? It just felt like,
no.
Surely you could just
call.
If I'm getting mugged, I go. I stand in the middle of the street, and I scream in a high pitched voice.
When she notices that she's being followed in the gas station, which is the place where he takes the time to go into her car while she's in the gas station and gets her phone and works out in that time that it's unlocked. And works out also that there's an iPad in the car that he can also make it look like he's stolen, but actually he's got some gaffer tape so he can gaffer tape it to the underside of the passenger seat so he can make sure he can follow her and that doesn't lock at some point, he doesn't lose connection. He's managed to do all that without being noticed by anyone at all.
And also, he's had to put the plan together really fast. And also, I'm just thinking, I would never be able to... You know the thing they say, when you're really angry, you count down from 10?
Yeah.
The amount of stuff he's had to do to stay angry... Yeah. At the point where he's stolen the phone, he's replaced it with a Nokia. Has he swapped it with his own phone?
Yeah, he's got a flip phone.
He's taken the iPad and hit... Sorry, I can't remember if you've just said this, Mike. Hidden it within her own car by taping it. Like all that, wouldn't you just, by the end of that, you'd be just like, oh, come on, Mike.
Exactly. I'm just gonna go home. It's ridiculous. Look at me.
This is silly. I'm going to buy some crisps. I like crisps. Got to get a big pack of crisps. you know, like you wouldn't stay angry. Even if he were unhinged. And also, he's killed two people at the top. Has he not got it out of his system?
Because, yeah.
He's literally hammered two people to death at the top of the movie.
They've basically had a real trouble, I think, the filmmakers at this point, haven't they? Because they know they're about to step into that quite fiddly thing of the people on telephone movie, which is quite hard to pull off.
Yeah.
Like phone booth or whatever, or that Tom Hardy thing where he plays a Welshman coming
Locke.
From... You know, it's quite hard to do those
it
films
needs some finesse
and keep some
to do well.
Suspense. So they just have that, but they also they have him driving through a series of people and cars at the same time.
Well, I know there aren't that many positives in this film, but I'm gonna say that I quite enjoyed the murders. Some of the murders were quite good.
So I've written down in my notes.
Yeah.
The scene where he stabs her lawyer with a butter knife
in the neck. I like
I've written, this is the high point so far.
It really is. It's a really good friend. So he goes to meet... So she's on the way to see her lawyer about the divorce.
About the divorce. And he knows about this because he's got her phone, so he can
see
what
she's... He's done a tremendous job of harvesting an incredible amount of data from her phone and from her messages. Again, in that same period where she's... He's nicked the phone. He's taped the iPad under the seat. He's got he's read all
the messages.
This
would have made sense if he was like an ex-intelligence, ex-CIA or something.
He's got Jason Bourne level brain.
He's a guy whose own phone is a flip phone.
Yeah,
that's a very good point. How does he know that he can use? In fact, how can he trace her iPad if he doesn't have an iPhone? Because he's got her phone. But he's using Find My Phone on her iPhone.
Yeah,
her iPad, and he himself is a flip phone Nokia.
Yeah,
that's a very good point, man. But he essentially. He calls her. So essentially, she's in her own car.
Yeah.
He calls her at a point and says, I've got your phone, my darling. and he's talking
Who
to her.
Who should I kill?
No, hang on. Can we come on to that in a minute? Because I love that. But that's after the diner. That's after the diner
first, of course, isn't it? Yeah.
And he basically, I can't remember. So does he see from her messages that she's going
to this diner to meet?
So he decides to go and meet the lawyer instead.
He says, "I'm just a friend of hers, and I've come to say that she's terribly sorry for not being able to make this whatever it is." Yeah.
So he has this chat with the lawyer, and I think Mike, in terms of, I think this touching on something that you've been talking about. I think also at this point we're supposed to feel it's a divorce lawyer getting what's coming a little bit.
Yeah.
There's supposed to be a little bit of that
They've all got it coming.
Yeah.
And even later on, it is explained to us that Russell Crowe's character, hey, he was just a regular guy. He was working on a building site or something. He got injured. He got fired just before he was pensionable.
It's
do you know what I mean?
His fault.
It's not, he's not just a total, total A-pipe. He's had a rough old time from the system. And these people
Total
come along.
Pipe would have been a good name for this film.
And he gets divorced, and people divorce him, and people want stuff.
Yeah, and we've heard
he's
in the
had
opening,
it up to here.
Yeah, and we know from the opening credit sequence that it's a hard time for society because so many people are taking selfies that good working men are getting fired.
And they've laid off 1,000 policemen, and that's an issue apparently.
But I think the reason they see that in the opening credit sequence is because. Right. It's simply to justify the amount
of shit.
In fact,
the police don't shut this down immediately.
The fact that the police are not shutting down this whole story. Because it struck me that if this could happen, it would be happening all the time. I mean, if I could take revenge on someone this easy, I'd have done it like loads probably by now. It can't be that easy.
Certainly if you're driving around in your own pickup truck.
Yeah,
right?
Exactly.
I mean, in the UK, ANPR are going to pick up your plates in no time. You're going to be arrested within 2 hours.
Yeah.
Done.
So he goes to a diner. And
he goes to a diner. He has a chat with the lawyer. Yeah. So something I've written down, there's quite good, throughout this film, you see this in a lot of films, there's a kind of the kind of physics of stabbing is completely out. Like anything, you can just shove anything into anyone and it'll kill
into
them.
Any part of anyone's
you
body.
You can shove anything into any part of anyone.
And it kills them immediately.
And because it's basically, as you say, Ben, it's sort of a butter knife to, is it the back of the neck?
Butter knife to the spine, basically.
To the spine. Yeah. That would not go in. That butter knife would break off.
Yeah. No, and there's a really bad sound effect. Again, like you said earlier with the ring sound effect. They put in the kind of
probably
sound
the same one.
It's probably
the same as all purpose.
Of the knife going in so easily and just kind of like...
Yeah.
Just kind of like...
Yeah, like you know, through cake.
Yeah.
And but
he's fantastically strong, isn't he, this character? We get that a few times.
But still, even so, that just the physics of that wouldn't work. Because the knife would break off.
No, it would slip out of his...
Just slip out. What would really happen is you'd go like, bang, the guy would go, ah!
And then and the police would come around and he's really hurt his hand on the knife.
And then... And then Russell Crowe would sort of stumble out a bit confused, and he'd be picked up by a street cop, driven to a station, given a verbal warning, and he would just and he'd just
trying to ram some cutlery through a man's neck. It's a first offence.
Also, there's when the lawyer gets killed, someone is filming it on their phone. Satire.
Yes. Remember? Yes.
Yeah,
they've all got their.
But so the sense of it in the film is like, isn't that bad that they're filming it? But actually, that will help.
Hugely helpful.
Like hugely
conviction
in proceedings. Yeah.
And what else are they meant to do? They're not going to be able to stop him. He's this huge, you know, scary, hairy bloke with a knife.
Yeah, it's if anything, it's brave really to film it. You're drawing attention to yourself and
exactly.
Yeah. So I think then essentially as the film escalates, that there are more and more murders. I mean,
and that's an interesting choice of word, given that it does start with a man hammering two people to death and then blowing the house up.
The violence bar starts quite high, and it is very. I mean, one thing I will say about this film, it is very violent.
Yes,
isn't it? I mean, you can't take that away from it. So the restaurant kill. So the restaurant kill happens.
Mm.
Then there's a very, very, very funny moment, which I thought was absolutely hilarious, where he now tells her, I've killed you, a liar.
Yeah.
And so they're both driving around in their cars. For some reason, she just never goes to a police station. Everyone's just driving around in their cars the whole time.
Yeah.
And he says, I'm going through your phone. Who do you want me to kill next? She's like, I don't want you to kill anyone. He's like, I've got to, or I'm going to, mate. Or whatever. He's like, no, he's like, if you don't choose one, I'm going to kill your son or something. Anyway, he puts her in a situation where, you know, it's just such a crazy situation where he's like, I'm going to kill someone on your phone. You've got to tell me who I'm going to kill. Yeah. And she's like, I don't want to do that. That's mad. And no. And he's like, if you don't tell me who I'm going to kill, I'm going to kill your son, I think.
Yeah.
And then so there's this moment she pauses and then she just goes, Deborah.
And look, we've all got someone we'd say in that situation, right? We've all got a Deborah.
We've all got a Deborah.
She's thinking back to conversations. Well, she said gun to your head type conversations with friends in the past.
Yeah.
Just for a joke.
Yeah.
Going, I have actually thought about this.
Yeah, Deborah.
No, you think about it.
I'm glad I had that chat.
Deborah.
We all thought it was a bit of dark, macabre fun on a hen do, that chat, wasn't it? It's actually really come in handy. It's Deborah. Yeah, kill Deborah. but Deborah, of course, is the client that inspired her.
Mm. So again, she has it coming. Do you know what I mean?
So Deborah has it coming as well.
Yeah.
Yeah.
This is completely pivotal throughout the film. This is also, it's in that scene as well where they... We lose any sense of him getting a comeuppance as well, right? Later on, it'll be explained it's not all his fault he got fired. He's had a tough time.
Mm. Yeah.
But we're also not at all worried about him getting his comeuppance because he says explicitly suicide by cop would be fine.
He does say that.
So he's not at all afraid of death. He's not afraid of any sort of negative circumstances. He just could give monkeys. It's fine.
So and you believe him. That's a very good point. He doesn't actually get a comeuppance, does he?
No, he does get killed. And
But he's already said he doesn't mind that.
He sort of knows that's where the day's got to end.
But it's
anyway.
Not because in a good in a better film, in a film which had more of a moral sort of compass, it would be the ending where it would be like, you know what? I'm actually not going to kill you.
Yeah.
You're going to serve time.
Yeah.
and you're going to have to live with the shame of your actions. And then the guy goes, no, no, kill me, please. Yeah, whatever. But that didn't happen.
Nope.
He just get, no.
He knew he was getting murdered at some point.
But we've skipped ahead to his death. So there's some other hot kills that need to be talked about. Okay. He gets into her house. He does a very good... He does a kind of reverse stab.
Yeah, that's really horrible.
It's an innocent
young woman who the filmmakers have made us
believe.
But
Mike's into coupons.
Is a wastrel.
Coupons. She was not an innocent young woman.
According to the thesis of the film, she's got it coming.
But he... Basically, Fred is holding a dagger to kill Russell Crowe.
Yeah.
And Russell Crowe picks up Fred's girlfriend, brings her over, and they have time to have this conversation where he's like, I've got your wife. And he's like, no, it's actually my fiance. Oh, right. It's like, that's a real minor thing to be bringing up.
He's got a date fixed, or? Yeah, no, it's good. Yeah. Have you got your VK catering? Because I do know someone actually who's pretty decent. Unless you're allergic to prawns, it's all prawns, completely prawn based catering.
Yeah.
And don't worry about the photos. You're never going to look at them again.
Do you know what my sister did? She just handed out the old disposable cameras. It's really good fun.
It's a fun little
nostalgic throwback, and people really enjoyed it. And actually, you got something really more spontaneous. And
honestly, everyone says they will, but please keep the speeches short. Yeah, it's going to be a long engagement, mate, a very long engagement, because you're both going to be dead. So you could say it's a very short engagement, I suppose. Depends how you look at it. But he picks up Fred's fiancée and sort of reverse stabs her on his
onto the knife. Fred does not have the presence of mind to loosen his grip.
Again, it's the stab physics. It's completely all over the shop. There's no way you could go up to someone and just go chicka-chicka-chicka and shove someone into the dagger. Again, we all would have done it by now if it was that easy to frame someone for a murder. You just pick up the person you want murdered, give a knife to someone else and go chicka-chicka-chicka on top of them. And then he sets fire to Fred.
Well, no, before he sets fire to him, there's a great moment, which is my moment of the film.
Oh,
this
really?
It's Ben's moment of the film.
Benjamin's moment of the film. Okay. Which is when Russell Crowe rings up our protagonist and says, well, I'm about to do Australian accent, I should do a Southern accent. If you can. Your brother's sitting in a puddle of lighter fluid in his own piss. Put me on speaker. He uses that as the leverage to get him on speakerphone.
In lighter fuel in his own piss.
And then, Henry, you're so right.
But which is also, as it happens coincidentally, that's Russell Crowe's breakfast smoothie rider, isn't it? Every day. It's a mixture of light food and his own piss. Anyway, go on.
And then, as you said earlier, Henry, he sets him on fire and then pushes him on a kind of wheelchair towards a cop.
At a policeman.
Yeah, he's one of those office wheelie chairs.
He's one of those office wheelie chairs.
Thank God they had one of those in the bedroom.
Yeah. Yeah, it's strange.
What? I've written a little note here. You, in terms of how sharp that dagger would have to be, it would have to be one of those amazing Japanese steak knives that you consider getting your dad every Christmas. You know, like it would have to be one that's incredibly sharp.
But your mother's got a superstition about buying knives for people as being unlucky.
Exactly.
So
yeah.
Don't.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And there's always
It would be such a good present. It would be such a good present.
But of course, there is always that risk that your father would pick up someone
befriended,
who didn't like
befriended very much a murder.
And stab it against the blade.
From here on in, I would say that I began to sort of lose. Like, I stopped watching a bit and started looking at my phone quite a lot.
Yeah. Which I can understand.
Because we then enter a sort of section where there's a lot of driving around again.
Yeah.
He's lost her. He's in someone else. He's in the minivan from earlier that we saw.
Well, what happens is she decides at this point. So another thing which is really clangingly dropped earlier on in the film is that the son has worked out a new tactic on Fortnite.
Yes.
Which he describes at weird length early on, and you know it's going to come back. And she suddenly out of nowhere goes, no, we're going to do the thing that happened that you do in Fortnite.
Yeah.
I'm actually starting to listen to my... Because also she hugs him. There's a point in about 20 minutes to go where she suddenly like reconnects with her son a bit.
Yeah.
I think because loads of people have been stabbed, and sometimes that's what it takes. Just a spate of stabbings to bring a family together. She goes, what we're going to do is we're going to drive to... We're going to essentially lure him because they've worked out that he's following her using the iPad thing in the car. They're going to lure her to her, I assumed grandmother's, but it turns out it's actually her mother's old people's community area.
Not which, quite. Close.
And is that is right?
You're very close.
Okay, what is it?
It's to their old neighbourhood where their mother used to live, where she owns the house that they're trying to sell. Because what they love in this film, what the thing where the writers are constantly patting themselves on the back is that they feel like they've seeded everything.
Yes.
So therefore, it must be perfect writing. Because we mentioned ages ago...
And people love eating seeds.
There's nothing more than people like being fed seeds. Because very early on in the film, someone vaguely mentioned, oh, she was getting lost, possibly because she has some cognitive decline, or is it just because there's a bit of a Warren back there? I get lost sometimes. Yes. Too, it's a bit of a Warren.
It's like walking around spaghetti or something. The son slash brother slash uncle
seed
says.
Seed, tick.
Seeded. Time to reap what we sowed.
So now they lure him into this extraordinary labyrinth. We're told it's just like quite a wide street, suburban area.
It looks very easily navigable.
Quite well town planned.
Mike, at the point where they lure him in, he's chasing her, and then she does a sudden right turn.
Yeah.
Into that area, and he overshoots.
Yeah.
In that moment, you get out of the car, you go into anyone's house, you call the cops, it's over.
Yeah.
But because they've got this moment, but instead they
Henry, 1,000 cops have been laid off.
That's true, 1,000 cops have been laid off.
There's no cops left
because they're too busy arresting people for taking selfies.
That's it. Well, and taking selfies of themselves, arresting the people taking selfies.
Exactly. So it's exponential. So they go up to this house. So I was thinking, why is the granny not there? But it's the house that's, oh gosh.
She's been moved into an old
people's. And the logic is that they are then going to go, but then they do a strange thing where it's a labyrinth. Has he got the address or not? He's got all the other data from the phone, but for some reason he doesn't have the address, this address. So then the thinking is, so they have lost him, but then rather than just hiding the car's left in plain sight.
Outside the house which they're in.
Yes.
Yeah. He just sat in the car.
So they could really easily just park the car outside someone else's house and just let
them. And it's over. The story is over. Over. You're safe.
Some other family gets killed, of course. Yes, accidentally. Yeah, but whatever. Fine. Yeah. So what is the plan? He hides in some attic space to give her time to get a golf club.
So what is the plan? The kid goes to hide in the attic.
She then gets in someone else's car. I don't know where the other cars come from.
And rams him.
I don't know if it's the mum's old car, rams him.
Yeah,
because he said something about ramming with a shopping trolley, I think, in his Fortnight plan. But again, it's seeded, so don't worry about too much, because remember, it was seeded.
It's seeded. So it works. It must work, because it's seeded.
Yeah.
That bit that you thought was a bit weird earlier turns out to be actually really, really important.
Pivotal. Everything that is said in that first weird scene in the kitchen with the family is seed. It's just people with seeds flying out of their mouths. So everything that is said is a setup for something later on, which is why the conversation has no natural flow, makes no sense in its own right.
And as Mike says, if someone says something near the beginning of a film and then it becomes pertinent at the end of the film, that's good writing.
That's Chekhov.
That's Chekhov, baby.
So she rams him in the car.
He gets rammed. She manages to flip over his pickup truck with her Hyundai i10, which is pretty skillful.
That's right. Yep.
That is good going, isn't it?
Yeah.
You've got to get the angle just right.
And then he does the lovely classic movie ninja trope, which I always love, of there is no physical way he could possibly have got out of there and disappeared.
That's right, yeah.
Particularly given that this character weighs 4,000 kilos.
But he's somehow already, liquid, has moved out of the car. Through the sunroof, presumably?
Through the sunroof. And it's hidden, even though all of the front lawns we've seen, there's no shrubbery anywhere. There's nothing, no shrubbery, do you know what I mean? No. But he is...
The lack of shrubbery is one of my top five things about the film. The positives.
It's not weighed down by shrubbery like so many films these days.
Yeah, it's just refreshing to have... Yeah. So then he bonks her on the head. She passes out. He goes into the house to get the kid. The kid's in the attic. The kid knocks over something.
Yeah.
Then, that's right. Then
just stay still, mate.
Just stay still.
Come on.
Then a weird thing happens where the little door. So he's gone into a little Narnia style. There's some clothes hung up, and there's a little mini door which goes through to an attic space behind. Mm-hmm. That door opens. We assume it's going to be Russell Crowe, but it's actually the mother. Hmm. Yeah. Really, remember?
Yeah.
It's quite a weird moment.
Yeah. I was heavily checked out by this.
And the child screams, yeah.
Oh, that's it. So the mother sticks her head in. The child goes,
giving away their
But the mother has no awareness of that.
He's done the same beat twice.
But the mother doesn't take that on board. So she comes through. He goes, ah! Right? Screaming. So obviously, Roscoe now knows where they are. But the mother doesn't really notice that, just starts chatting to him, going, yeah. So,
it's a bit rough, isn't it?
It's been a really bad day, isn't it?
It was right. Yes, I'm having a really bad day.
What do you want? We're going to have a good holiday this year. And then she goes, no, I did scream quite loudly, Mum. He says, I scream. And then she gets dragged out from the feet. Yeah. Obviously by Russell Crowe. I mean, she sort of suddenly forgets about Russell Crowe. I mean, I'm watching the film and I'm at one step removed and I'm aware of Russell Crowe. She's actually happening to her. She's forgotten about Russell Crowe. I mean...
A man who's been pursuing her all day, trying to murder her.
Completely forgotten. She sticks her head through the...
She's just rammed a car into him. Seconds ago.
Does she assume he's dealt with? Is that what's going on? Like, she thinks...
No, far from it. Because the last time she saw him, he bonked her on the head and said, I'm going to go and kill your son now.
Yeah. And remember, this
fairly,
face is the...
fairly open about it, wasn't he?
Yeah, he's fairly open about it. So she somehow got around, somehow in the house, she managed to get up sort of around.
I didn't mind because the house is extraordinarily huge. Massive.
Absolutely
massive. And even if they'd sold it for a cut price, they'd all be fine, everyone in that first scene, if they just
coupons.
Yeah, exactly. Come on.
So then she, sure enough, wham, again, stabbing physics going out the window, stabs a pair of scissors into his eye.
Yeah, but now there's a fist fight with a super strong man that she, through sheer maternal will.
Yeah.
Now, this happens quite a lot in films, I think, which is that all this stuff happens that takes about an hour and a half.
Yeah.
But it all just comes down to, in the end, you can just stab them in the eye with something.
Yeah.
And you could have done that at minute one. Yeah. And the whole thing.
Good point, just do you know what I mean?
There's all this stuff happens, and then it always just comes down to, like, oh, I just stab him and it's fine.
Yeah. Just this in that first scene, if she just reached in her pocket and said, do you know what, son? I'm going to give you these scissors. See that man who's trying to talk to you in the next car? Just stab him in the eye for me.
Stab him in the eye.
And we can get on with the rest of our day.
And then kick it through and do a really...
Do a bon mot.
Do a really bad bon mot.
What was her bon mot?
Here's your double tap.
Here's your courtesy tap.
That's right.
Yeah. And then kicks it through his face.
See, nothing was wasted. Do you see?
Nothing.
In the first act, nothing
seed.
Was so lean.
It was all seed.
Nothing.
It was a squirrel banquet. Seed. A squirrel banquet.
What it does do is she rams the candy cane themed scissors into his eye, as we set up earlier.
Yeah.
And he falls back. Mm-hmm. But they haven't gone in quite far enough. And there's a great moment, which I really love in films, which is when the baddie rallies. You think he's dead, and then rally.
And he goes,
And then she just kicks them, and they go further into his brain, and he dies.
Yeah.
But that's a moment I do actually enjoy.
It is good. It's needed. Is it needed?
They've obeyed that trope, haven't they, where the baddie has to know that they've had it. They have a moment of realisation. It's not enough just to be spontaneously stabbed in the eye. You have enough time to know that they've lost. But as we've discussed in this case, it doesn't matter because that's what he was hoping that would happen.
It's true.
Suicide by cop is fine by me. It suggested he was open-minded. Yeah. Suicide by hard-pressed a hairdresser would also be fine.
Yeah.
Yes.
And he's given a fairly even-handed obituary in the news coverage, isn't he? He's not particularly slammed.
No, he's had
a
tough time. He's got laid off. He was injured. It's not his fault.
I actually didn't see. I think I turned it off at that point. I don't think I saw the obituary. So what happens? You hear some
in
news
the background
footage.
During right. something. At the end, you hear the news coverage, don't you? That he was laid off at work, and
he was injured at work. He wasn't just laid off. It wasn't his fault. He was just being a working man, and the man stuck it to him, even though he got injured doing the work, and no pension, no future. Yeah. Wife leaves him for another man.
In this culture that we live in of selfies and so on.
Some woman didn't apologise to him. Another woman was doing their makeup in the car.
Yeah.
Some woman had coupons and was getting in his way. Do you know what I mean?
That's true. I think it is. It's as well as being absolutely rubbish, it's quite problematic, this film.
I think you're so right, because I guess that's an attempt at being even-handed or trying to, I don't know what they're trying to say.
What on earth is the film trying to say?
I think we don't need to be even-handed about that kind of character.
No, somebody who's murdered multiple people.
Yeah. And then there's two things that happen at the very end. There's one is I think the oversleeping thing is reiterated. So again, it's like
your fault.
If you had just set your alarm.
Yeah, that's right.
Mother. And the other one is, I mean, Henry, you alluded to this earlier on. Re-Uncle Freddy.
Oh, re-Uncle Freddy. Well, the penultimate line of the film, I think, is they get a phone call and she goes to her son, Uncle Fred's alive.
Oh, that's right.
Both yes. Burst into tears. And I've written, yeah, but he's an absolute prick. I was so, didn't care that Uncle Fred was alive. That guy, I mean, who cares about Fred?
We don't know what stage he's in, but he's alive.
Uncle Fred's alive.
Uncle Fred's alive.
And then at the end, the very end,
she's in her place. She's in her place. The very last scene, yes.
Yeah.
There's another, she's road raged by a different man.
But this time she...
And instead of fighting back and resisting or even honking, she knows, just sit quietly and let the man road rage you.
And also, and also the male sons. Mm.
Yes.
As sons often are.
Mm. Yeah. He's like, good idea, man.
He's like, well done, right. So actually, and the son has been the person who's kind of knows the most and is the most right about stuff generally, hasn't he?
Oh, yeah. He cracks the puzzle character. Find your phone and...
He's generally on top of things.
Yeah. Also, can I say, one of the most hangdog child actors I've ever seen.
You're very hangdog.
He somehow portrays like beaten down 45-year-old insurance salesman through the body of a 9-year-old. Yeah, it's incredible.
Yeah. He did that quite well. I thought he was quite good, actually. Yeah.
All the acting was good. Like, all these people have wasted on this shitty script.
Totally. Yeah, she's good.
She's great.
The lead is
Another thing I thought was quite funny. I can't believe this would happen in real life. Hmm. After all this has happened, there's been multiple murders. There's been sort of arson. There's been all sorts.
Running over. Yeah.
Running over. She's killed someone in self-defense.
Mm-hmm.
And they just have this chat with the police, and the police goes, you know what, you can go now, so really thanks. Yeah. And then she's back in her car again. Would you get back in the car on the same day, drive your son, still giving
Do you need my car? It was part of the crime scene. Yeah. Do you know what? Otherwise
Bob has to drive you back, and Bob's nearly finished his shift, and he's really...
I think the policeman actually says, we've taken your statement, you can go.
Yeah.
But that statement's taking hours and hours, right?
Surely, because she has killed someone, even at self-defense.
The statement includes, I have killed a man.
Yeah. And she's still giving him a lift at the end. Anyway, so I think, Mike, that's okay. There's a few other films which this film reminded me of.
Oh, yeah. I mean, no doubt that the people who made it were huge fans of Falling Down.
Yeah, so because Falling Down is the one that it most... And Falling Down is a much, much better film, isn't it?
As it's a
I remember,
brilliant
I seen
film.
It for a long time.
Yeah, but it's got, and it's, he's a problematic character.
Yes.
And he similarly, I think, has a restraining order against him from his wife. So there's definitely.
But that film.
But it's also like, it's got humour in it, and it does have like.
Because that film trod the line well of actually, you know what, we do all find it annoying when this kind of stuff happens.
Yeah.
And
a
kind of fantasy of taking some kind of revenge on society. But because he doesn't actually. I don't think he actually kills any. Or I can't remember. Does he?
I think he possibly kills a gang member or a Nazi. But there are extenuating but circumstances.
The famous bit, the bit that was trailed a lot, was he's in the McDonald's. He's in a burger place.
One minute past 11,
they won't give him the breakfast.
And he
kind of gets a gun out. I mean, that had a wit to it, didn't it? That was kind of okay somehow.
And there's also it was at a time where like that whole sort of mega city was. Sort of bleeding through as an idea. LA is this absolutely massive, massive, mega, sprawling, endless, totally unsympathetic city with gangs and fascists and all kinds of factions going on. And, you know, not long after riots, race riots, and it was interesting. And it was funny and gripping, right? And the other thing it reminded me is of the early Spielberg.
Duel.
Which
I've never actually seen, though.
Duel is good, but the thing about Duel, it's this kind of, it's basically like a road rage type thing, but it's basically fundamentally, it's like it's some bloke having a rough day who's being, gets a road rage incident with this trucker.
Yeah.
But the truck is like this weird old kind of rusty thing.
Is it like a mystery?
The is it a little bit mysterious and supernatural?
You never fully see the trucker, right? Yeah. So there's this weird kind of supernatural kind of like, it makes the enemy really terrifying because you don't see him. There seems no reason for it. It's senseless. It's like, it's just at pure, out in this wilderness, pure terror. Whereas here we know exactly what's going on from the get-go.
Yeah, yeah.
It's just this sort of, yeah.
And where the sympathy of the filmmaker lies in this film is just really bizarre and confusing and uncomfortable.
Yeah.
Can I ask a question, which is that, do you think Russell Crowe... So I was looking forward to this film because I feel like, as we've spoken about before, I think, in the context of Gladiator, what Russell Crowe's really good at doing on screen is being like unbridled anger in a man, and he just wants to fucking... what he can do really nicely. And I thought, oh, maybe he'll be good at this because that's what this film is. He's needs to be this guy with brimming anger under the surface.
Yeah.
But the script is so shit that I don't think he gets a chance to...
He just did a lot of grimacing and gurning and like
and it feels like maybe they had that chat, the filmmakers, and they thought, well, seeing as that's what he's so good at, let's just make him just try and do that but for the whole film and nothing else, but also as the baddie, not the goodie. What it reminded me of was like, it wasn't just those films. It reminded me of, if you see a sort of a group of small children doing sort of drawings in crayon, and there'll usually be some boys going sort of pew, 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 and sort of rockets and swords and stuff. It's the boy in the corner who's really and sort of there's a lot of blood, brains. Yeah, Henry Packer. There's brains spilling out. There are injuries. There's injury detail in the child's drawing that the child shouldn't know about. It's that kid has gone on to become a filmmaker.
Yeah, it was sadistic in a way that I didn't like.
It was. The other film it reminded me of as a much less good version of is Cape Fear. Have you seen Cape Fear? The De Niro version. No.
I
really like that film.
Yeah, I like that film. I haven't seen it for years and years.
So it's got the similarity because it's someone trying to sort of destroy a family.
Yeah.
He's Southern as well, weirdly. I don't know if it's just a coincidence. But De Niro's playing this, like, it's all like in the Deep South. And it's a remake of an older film.
It's innocent people in deep, deep, deep shit.
It isn't people in deep shit, but what's good about it? So this is the thing, Mike, that interests me about this idea of blame and stuff, of her being to blame in this film to some degree. Because in the film Cape Fear... What's kind of interesting about the film is the lawyer has made a mistake, but the fact that he's partially is at fault makes the film much more really interesting.
Yeah.
Because do you remember what's happened?
Remind me.
So he's not really at fault. That's the thing. But he's kind of made a mistake in a way, you could argue. But basically, Robert De Niro is a horrible, like, rapist murderer.
Yeah.
And this lawyer put him away, but in a... He didn't follow the letter of the law in putting, you know, he had to sort of break, I can't remember what it is, some sort of minor thing. He's broken the law to put him away.
Does this finish with them all on a boat?
Yes.
Yes, yeah. I have seen it, yes.
So Robert De Niro's been in prison and ate banana and cell for like years and years, and he's studied the law and done loads of beefing up. And he knows exactly how this lawyer, did not do
put
his job by the letter of the law, did not do his job properly. So the lawyer has kind of made a mistake, but he kind of hasn't. But that makes it... Yeah. I don't know, that's just sort of well handled. And then he comes after them. It's really, and also he infiltrates the family in a really disturbing way by getting the daughter to sort of fall in love with him. It's just really creepy and disturbing and excellent.
But like this film, that film has got the moment where you think he's dead.
Yes.
Because he's come off the boat or something. And then 2 minutes later, he's back and he's going, and he's on fire and he's sort
it's
of
also
like,
got a great death scene where he's speaking in tongues. As he goes down into the river, he's going, which this film could have done with, I'd say.
Yeah. Definitely. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Wouldn't have been a mess.
That's the other thing about this film is the other way you could make this film better is by just having a lot more fun with it.
Yes, exactly. It wasn't exactly fun.
No.
It was kind of, the tone was like so weirdly all over the place.
Yeah.
Because I think we were all expecting it to be a big, silly, fun, stupid thriller, but actually it was a bit, it was kind of an uncomfortable.
Yeah, well, it starts with horrible sadistic violence,
sadistic,
and it stays
misogynistic.
It doesn't start with a bit of a road rage and a spat that, like, slowly gets up. Oh, golly, he's keyed a car. What's he going to do next? Oh, he's chucked an egg at a son.
Yeah. Ooh, but there's a bit, isn't there? There's a bit where I think the filmmaker thinks it's funny, which is when they finally flag down a policeman on the highway. They're driving along and there's a policeman next to them in a car. And they get the windows down and they start saying to him, the guy who's following us, like, he's behind us. Mm. And so he's going to call it into the station or whatever. And then he gets...
Oh, it's a horrible death.
He gets, like, sort of juggernauted by a juggernaut. Yeah.
Well, that's another bit of physics where... That, I didn't think that could happen because a truck drives like through
his car,
rather than bashing it to the side. Yeah.
But I think it's meant to be funny. I think it's meant to be like a you thought. Do you know what I mean? Like the filmmaker's just a dick basically.
Yes. Yeah.
With a bad sense of humor.
Yeah.
Whereas you could make a fun version of this film, even including murders and
The rest
totally. You could have a wickedly fun black comedy.
Oh, yeah. Wickedly dark,
Or even just a thriller with some wit. You know.
Yeah. Yeah, just shit. So let's final thoughts and ratings.
So my final rating is half a hot bean
out of
16 today. I guess just for the lack of shrubbery, nice clean lighting, not obscured by too many shrubs.
I'm going to give it it's out of 16. Are you going today?
Let's go for an out of 16 rating.
Yeah. Okay, that, because I'm going to go for minus 16 beans.
Crikey!
Yeah,
really.
I cannot.
It's
devastatingly
bad.
I think it's since that Lars von Trier film that I think I was made to see perhaps 15 years ago, something like that. Hmm. Does that sound about right? 12, 15. I can't remember enjoying a film less.
That's a big call.
Yeah.
I'm a little bit less down than you, Mike. Mm. I think it's rubbish.
Yeah.
But it's easy to watch if you're having your breakfast after having dropped off your car at the MOT centre.
And your phone's charged so you couldn't do some puzzles at the same time, right?
I was basically on the phone the whole time. And then I got a phone call saying that my i10 had sailed through the MOT.
I think that's put a positive spin on the film. Right,
yeah,
then.
It has.
So great news.
I'm not a reliable narrator.
If you watch it on a good news day and you're double screening, it's very much a double screen.
Yeah, you've got a nice, really nice bowl of Weetabix, nice bit of muesli on top.
Try and watch something incredibly heartwarming and wholesome, like, for example, anything with Monty Don in it on the other screen.
Yeah.
Sort of compensate.
So I'm giving it 3 hot beans out of 16 hot beans.
Okay. Seems fair.
Blimey.
Would you recommend any listeners to this go and watch it now?
I would feel dreadful if someone's... I apologise unreservedly if someone has watched it in preparation for this.
In fact, should we even tell people that this is the film we're going to do? Because historically we've let people know on Patreon which films we're going to cover because some people like to watch them ahead of time. I think we shouldn't do that.
I think that's right.
Yeah. We're basically saying don't watch this film. In fact, I think maybe we should actually just not broadcast this. Let's not broadcast this. Yeah.
Not broadcast it and make every effort from this point on to find every copy we can of that film and destroy it.
Destroy it.
It's also very important that Russell Crowe never hears this.
Yeah.
If you're listening to this, it's because we've all been reverse stabbed on an expensive Jeopardy steak knife by Russell Crowe or one of his many acolytes.
And understand, Russell, there's some of your work you've done in the past that we've enjoyed immensely.
Yeah.
We're fans.
He's in LA Confidential, which
brilliant,
which tops the best films of all time list quite often.
Yeah, it's often the IMDb top,
and he's
film.
A great character in it.
Yeah, brilliant. Yeah. Quick, last format point we haven't done is Plemonstential.
Plemonstential, very important. Now, could Plemons? The thing is, I don't think Plemons could improve this film because I put all of the problems of this film at the feet of the screenwriter, because the actors actually are good actors. You can tell they're good. They're not messing anything up.
Yeah.
So it's hard because I don't think it's an actor
even
problem.
Even Plemons couldn't save it.
I think it would be interesting to insert Plemons somehow into that first family scene to see if he can, if his improv acting skills could...
To make more sense of it.
Make sense of it. And whether that's an established character, whether it's Uncle Freddy or the demented grandma who's just on the tablet. Or whether it's just a completely different character who comes in as another son of the woman that he's older than.
I'd like to see him play a kind of supernatural character who brings a whole new edge to the whole film.
Okay.
Like he's maybe Russell Crowe from the afterlife?
Yes.
Interesting. It needed...
Yes, or he's been brought to life from... There's an ancient sort of Viking relic
that's
been left behind in Louisiana.
Yeah.
Swamps many hundreds of years ago.
A major
before.
Genre...
He's the Raven of old. Shift.
Yes. Yeah, that's good.
What about you, Henry? Where are you casting Plemons?
I would have Plemons play himself.
Interesting.
Okay. Yeah. In a kind of meta thing.
What about a kind of pre-credit sequence?
Oh, yeah. Mm.
Where Jesse Plemons turns down the role.
Yes. And the whole thing's become a satire about Hollywood.
Yeah.
That's very good.
It could reframe the whole thing in a way that's quite wholesome.
And then right at the end, you could see Plemons again, and it could be one of those, you know, those Hollywood things where there's like he's in a circle that gets smaller and smaller, and he just gives a little wink. The end. Yeah. That's the last thing you see.
Sort of Warner Brothers, that sort of like Looney Tunes style.
Yeah,
like,
I like that. To say, I was right about that, wasn't I?
Yeah, I like that.
I made a good shout there, didn't I?
Yeah.
And people would have a bit of a feel-good sense at the end, wouldn't they?
Yeah. Bookend it with Plemons.
Well, there we go. That was Unhinged.
Probably just don't watch it.
Don't watch it. Thanks for listening, though.